I have the privilege of introducing our guest speaker for tonight. So we have we've been going through a series called Jesus at University this month. We had Dr. Segun Oyedele speak last week, and tonight we've got Mr. David Lee. Come up here. Yeah. David is a good friend of mine. He is he wears two hats, at least, if not more than that. One with the Global Aid Network and one with Power to Change Students here at UBCO. P2C is the another Christian club here on campus that I was also a part of when I was in university here. David and I started university together in 2016. And we both have Bachelor's of Sciences from UBCO. I think that's all. Yeah. Welcome, David.
Yeah. So... Well, thanks for having me here today. So I'm really happy for the privilege to share about a little bit about Jesus at University. So I'll take you on a little story from how I saw Jesus at University first when I came to here to UBCO. So little background about me, a little bit about myself. So I was originally from Hong Kong. So that's me. That's me in high school. I was born and raised in a Christian family. I go to church, like, you know, as a habit, every Sunday, go to Bible study groups, go to all of that sort of things, you know, throughout the week, youth group maybe on Saturday, church on Sunday and stuff. And I also led a Bible study group in my secular high school back then. And then I guess it was time to come to choose university. It's like, ooh, where should I go for university? So many choices, right? I knew I didn't want to stay in Hong Kong. I wanted to go see the world a bit more. So applied for 6 universities because that's the limit my high school let me apply for. So I applied for 5 American universities and 1 Canadian one. I guess you know where I'm here now. So it's interesting how God brought me here to Canada. So out of all the 6 universities, only 2 of them accepted me. And I guess I'm here purely based on QS ranking. Anyone looked at QS ranking when they chose universities? Yes. Well, okay, no, yes, yeah, so anyways, my grade 12 self was like, oh, okay, that's a good metric of how to choose a university, right? And so, yeah, I'm here. And then I didn't know I was here because I was like, yeah, apply for UBC. I was like, wait, what's the Okanagan? Anyone had this feeling? I was like, what's Okanagan? I was like, so it's not Vancouver. Oh, it's somewhere there. And basically, I have no idea where I was going to spend the next 4 years of my life. But there I was, the January before coming here, and I committed to it. So that's kind of my journey to university. And why am I saying this? Because back then, I wasn't putting my trust in God when I was making a lot of decisions. I would go to like these Bible studies, lead it even, or be part of like leading worship and going to Sunday school and going to church. But what I called myself a Christian, but I didn't think, actually now thinking back, I was actually a Christian. I would segregate my life this is my church friends or my church self. And then there's my daily self I do in school every day. And it's like segregated out. And I don't think I involved God in the decisions when I made, like when I, like say in choosing universities and stuff, you see, I use a really secular mindset, QS ranking to choose it. But yet God still had grace in that. God still like worked through my bad decisions, you say, or maybe right decisions to, use me. So fast forward a bit. And then, so this is me in university. So I got to experience a deeper relationship with God during university. So I first came here. I got connected to Power to Change. So there is when I learned that, hey, life as a Christian is not segregated out. It's integrated into your daily life. Living a mission doesn't have to be a Sunday thing. It doesn't have to be when you come to like a gathering or Bible study. It's every day in your actions, in your interactions with people. And so that's when I got to get to know Jesus more and have a deeper relationship with him. And you can see there's a retreats I went on the right. And then, on the right. And then on the left, I went on mission trip. So the bottom one was in the first year of my university. I went to Paris for... mission trip, and then second year I went to Copenhagen on the top. And so let's go to the next slide. So that's me. I also joined UCM as well. I was also part of it. So those were fun days, Christmas banquets, and actually, fun fact, Pastor James baptized me in the lake, and that was a fun experience, and that was me getting baptized there. So yeah, those are great experiences. And why am I bringing these up? It's because that Jesus is at university. He's at university throughout these groups, no matter if it's UCM or in Parity Change or the Catholic Club or even like other people like making their own little Bible studies I've heard in residences. Like Jesus is at university in these like tangible ways who manifests himself like that. And so it's really important to be connected to community. And that's why I guess you guys are here, and to find community, which can keep you accountable, to keep you kind of like, you know, like have someone to like journey together in your faith, because it's hard to do things like by yourself. And we as Christians weren't called to do this by ourselves. So that's kind of my university experience. Oh, I guess next slide. Let's see. Oh, yes, this. So any one of you felt like, you know, what you study in university is kind of not related to faith? Anyone feel like that? Or it's really related? No? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. So I felt like that as well. So in my second year, I was taking a fourth-year class, as you see. So it was a Geography 423. Anyone in Geography ESC? Anyone? What? Whoa, yeah. What?
It's so bad.
What? ESC? No? What? You don't call it that now? What?
I'm in ESC right now.
What? Anyways, so I took a course, Geo 423 is called Development of Environmental Thought. So we went through like different ways of like, you know, how like people think about the environment, think about their interaction with the land, how it changes through culture, history, and time, and people groups. So that was like kind of premise of the course. In one lecture, it was about Christianity and geography. I was like, ooh, nice. Next week is Christianity and geography. I like it. I'm a Christian. I think I know all this stuff. I think we're doing great as Christians. And then, that class is a 20-something person class. Keep that in mind. And then I was like excited. And then I went into the class. I was like, sitting there, I was like, ooh, let's see what like the professor would talk about it. And then she was like, okay, so let's talk about Christians. Christians are bad people. They did a lot of wrong stuff in history. They used the Bible to justify their bad actions. Like you can see all those imperialistic countries colonizing like different places, enslaving different people, and also like exploiting like different natural resources, expansionism. Oh, and industrialization was caused by Christians. And like, you know, climate change, pollution, everything. It's because of Christians like started all of this. I was like, wow, Caden, I guess we didn't have that big of a good impact in like as I thought. And then so here's the Bible verses my professor used. And she was like, oh yeah, because Christians use the Bible to justify what they say. So here you can see Genesis 1:26 in NIV. Then God said, let us make mankind in our own image, in our own likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals and over the creatures which move along the ground. And also in Genesis 1:28 in ESV now, I'll get some more like, you know, variation in words. So, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over it, all the fish in the sea. And you know, you get the point. So she was like, so the highlighted words I had there, she was like, yeah, so you can see that's why Christians were justified to rule over everything, rule over, you see, oh, subdue it. So you can like, you know, everything's placed under your feet, like you can like step on it and stuff. And then so have dominion over it. Oh, that means like, oh, everything you see you own and stuff. And so like that kind of thing. Oh, and the most interesting thing is be fruitful and multiply. So she was like saying, oh, humans are kind of like the virus of the world. You know, they multiply and spread out and then, you know, destroy the earth. We'll be better with less of them. So I went to that class. I was like, great. Like, what did I just learn? And I didn't say anything during that class, even though it's a 20-person class. I didn't raise my hand. I didn't say anything. And after class, I talked to a professor. I was like, oh, I guess I kind of agree with some things you say, but like, can we talk about certain things? And then she was actually open to it. And then she told me that, oh, right, I forgot, like, you're a Christian. And because I took two of her courses before, so I'm actually close to that professor. I still talk to her here and there. And she was like, oh yeah, actually, she's like, oh, I should have prepared this with you. It's like, you're Christian. You actually know the better perspective of it. So, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, maybe that's not a good representation. Maybe not so much. I was like, yeah. I was like, where do you get all these things from? She was like, oh, papers I read, like books I read and like, you know, peer review papers. I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, she was just saying, yeah, like she's like, I should have done it like with you, and like you know more, and you could have talked and you could have said something. And I was like actually surprised by her open posture about how she like treated me and talked to me. She was like, actually, she acknowledged that she had some, like, you know, points that she didn't know, and she acknowledged that she would have been better to consult me or like someone who actually knows it. And then, but I should have said something also during that time. But I was too afraid to be a Christian on campus, too afraid to admit that Jesus is on campus. But yet here it is, the professor who's not a Christian extending that offering to me. And the funny thing is that at the end, she gave me a comment for me. Well, this is a rolling comment she had for me over the years. She said, oh, David, you're not like those other Christians. It's like, you care about the environment. You care about, like, you know, climate change and stuff. And I was like, oh, how do you know I'm not like those Christians? What do you mean about those Christians then? It's like, how do you know I'm not those Christians? Because they're like, oh, you believe in science. I was like, okay, then. Yeah, I don't know. So it's interesting sometimes. It's actually interesting when you get to know people, how much it disarms you. So maybe just get to talk to your professors, get to chat with them and see what they think. Maybe they're actually very open to it. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the next one. So a little bit about like what I do. As Josh said, I wear multiple hats. I not only like do, well, PhD part-time on campus, I'll say. I also use my degree in environmental science and geography in other ways. So I also work for Global Aid Network, which is the humanitarian division of Priority Change, so PhD. And we have projects across Africa, so I oversee some of them. So we currently operate in Togo and Benin in West Africa, and also down there in Tanzania. So I'm part of the Water for Life initiative of Global Aid Network. So since our inception till now, we've built like 3,000 wells and over 1,000 church plants in like these countries. And I'm kind of in charge of the environmental programs, sustainability, and long-term development of these programs, making sure that what those Bible verses says, we are like actually stewards of these resources God has given us. And we have dominion over those things. And so we can like plan well and to use those resources. It doesn't mean that we don't trust God in these processes, but we also means that we can steward those resources well and plan it so that future generations can use it. So that's kind of my work in Global Aid Network. We can go to the next slide. And this is kind of what I get to see sometimes. And this is what people think I do every day. And people think I actually, like, some people still think I live in Benin or Togo. But I'm just like, oh, I actually don't. I live in Canada. And yeah, but this is like sometimes I get to see, like maybe once a year, I get to go to do village visits and just really get to see the impact of like clean drinking water in those lives of people who really need it. And also because of that, we've opened like a route, a pathway to share Jesus, share the living water to them, because now their physical needs are met. Now they're open to listening to their spiritual needs, their deeper felt needs in their lives as well. And then, yeah, that's actually kind of what I do mostly in the country, than village visits. I actually sit down with the team to train them on like maybe new things, new technologies or new programs and stuff. Because I, at the end, I'm just this guy who lives far, far away from them. And they are the hands and feet of our programs and what we do and the work. And so I kind of feel like my role is just to empower them so that they can know, have the knowledge to bless their villages. They speak their language. They're contextualized. They know what their community needs. So that's kind of like what I do there. And next thing is, that's kind of what I actually do on a day-to-day basis at home. Like, people think I do go travel, do crazy stuff like all the time. That's actually what I kind of do on a weekly basis, which is just Zoom calls. You can see looking at maps, looking at database, looking at error codes and coding stuff, looking at reports. So, you know, God also works through these mundane things, works through also these data collection things as well. And so, let me see. Okay, yeah, we can go to the next one. So this is one of the villages I visited this summer in Togo. And so this is the old water source before a village has like a well provided by us. They usually drink this. This is like a water collection pit. And so rainwater will fall down and then you collect water and then they drink from it. Does anyone want to drink from that? I guess not, right? Does anyone want to even use it to, you know, clean stuff? I don't know how much you can actually get cleaned with this. And so that's how much they need water physically. And that's how much they also need Jesus in these situations, because they feel hopeless and trapped in this cycle. And so of poverty and of despair and stuff. And we don't only go there to give them wells, but we also go there to give them like training on how to manage wells, how to on like, you know, community development, gender sensitivity, and we also share a gospel there. So we're not just giving them building infrastructure and giving it to them and saying bye, you're on your own. But we're giving them like skills and tools that they can use to help better their lives as well. So and that can like, you know, give a lot of change. And Jesus also is working in those places and transforming lives that we can't imagine. And so, yeah, next one, next slide. So actually, let's take a break from our little programming. I'm going to have a little plug. So this message was sponsored by Global 8 Network, my organization. So why am I saying this? Next slide. You can get the privilege of going to missions trip with me in August next year. So I have some info cards. You can come and talk to me afterwards if you like to join. So you actually get to go and see the work our teams are doing and how God is working in the local church, in the local communities there to make a difference in those communities. So it'll be August 2nd to 12th. And come talk to me afterwards if you want to know more and maybe join the trip. Okay, so little shameless plug, sorry. Yeah, okay, next. So I've talked about how Jesus is working in my life, or has worked in my life, and is still working. I've also talked about how I see Jesus in university, in these contexts. I also seen how Jesus worked in my life after university and stuff. But like over these years, and like doing some readings and also reflection and also processing things, I feel like there's two things I would like to, you know, bring to you guys and give some, I guess, tangible advice to you guys about certain topics which relates to university life and how you encounter God here. So the first one is problems versus tensions. So in the next slide, I can see a quote by Pastor Andy Stanley. So it says, life is filled with problems to be solved and tensions to be managed. So sometimes it helps to know which is which. So think about it this way. If you try to solve a tension, actually you end up with more problems in life. If you try to solve a tension, you end up with more problems in your life. And you'll take sides, you'll turn corners, you'll debate, divide, and label. But those, at the end of the days, are not problems to be solved, but instead tensions to be managed. So there's actually beauty in tension. Tension is in all of our lives. It's in all of our works, and it's in every day. And so it's important because in the tension, we find the beauty of Christ. And in the story of Christ, actually, it's full of tension. So one example is Jesus himself was a paradoxical tension because he was fully human, yet at the same time, fully God. When you think about that, he had to navigate the tension of being fully human, yet fully God. Divine, yet human. And also, he's the lion and the lamb. That's the tension. And he is also savior, but also friend to us. So he's the only one who can navigate and walk through these perfect tensions. So this sounds really conceptual for now. But let me give you a little example of like what tensions can be. So we can have a look. So look at this. Is it a tension? Anyone who's team coffee and who's team tea? No? Who likes coffee? Yeah? Woo! Who likes tea? Whoa. That's interesting. I'm team coffee, sorry. But yeah, see? It's a tension. It's a tension to be managed, not a problem to be solved. Okay, next one. Oh, now we're talking, right? Tim Hortons and Starbucks, right? Oh, it really feels like for some people, it's a problem to be solved, right? Someone really likes one company, I'm not going to say, and some people really like another one. Some people stand by some things. But at the end of the day, it's a tension to be managed because it's just a preference. Like, everyone can like different things. So yeah, let's go to the next one. And so let's talk about an example of tensions we face as a Christian. So conviction versus compassion. And in the example of for the lost in our community, for the people who don't yet know Jesus. So sometimes we'll gravitate, some people here will gravitate towards deep, deep compassion to people, wanting to understand the burdens and the hurts of those community, those people there. And some of us will actually tend to gravitate towards deep, deep convictions about what Scripture says, that they cannot compromise anything, and that you need to tell them that they're sinners and you need to repent. But going back to that, when you think about that, in the case of compassion, you need, in order for basically love to reign in this sense, truth has to suffer at time. And for conviction, it's the other way around. In order for truth to reign, love has to suffer. But this is not a problem we need to solve. It's a tension to manage, because we can't have either or. Jesus showed us compassion at times, but yet Holy Spirit also convicts us. So this is not a problem to be solved, but tension to be managed. And one way that you know where you're, like, where you gravitate is when someone talks on the side, usually the side you do not gravitate towards. And you find out where you land when you say, yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with what you're saying. But you always have to make sure that your own tendencies, right, gets the last word of the saying. So in the next slide, you'll see. So you'll say, basically, where your butt is, there your heart will be too. So yeah, that's what Matthew 6:21 says, right? Anyways, so how would you know that which side you gravitate? Basically, you'll say, I totally agree with you, what you're saying, but so-and-so, but this and that. And that's how you know where you actually gravitate. And so if we try to escape tensions, we'll actually inevitably take sides, label others, and polarize. And at the end, no one wins, no one benefits. The enemy will delight. And it's the wrestling with tensions that will help us walk the way of Christ. And tensions are at a heart level. So you can't just jump to your own logical conclusions and intellectual arguments for your side, because that's going to hinder actually the work of the Spirit. And so we need to recognize that we actually have sides. But the main thing is, how do I need to learn from the other side? How do I need to, like, learn? That's the question. And you need to sit with those tensions and try to understand what is it like to be like the person on the other side of these tensions. And there needs to be a lot of humility when it comes to navigating these tensions. And it's not easy. And as I said, Jesus was the only one who perfectly navigated these tensions. So let's look at some other examples after hearing this about tensions. So very practical one we are facing right now. Do you agree? Studying, doing homework. These are things you can do alone. But also other things you can do alone is prayer, devotion time with God. See, it's a tension to be managed, not a problem to be solved. Can't just take one or the other. Our calling here as a student is, well, to do well as a student. So, well, I can't sacrifice each one or another. Okay, we can go to the next one. So what about this? Having fun on weekends and going to church regularly on Sunday. See? Also attention to manage, not a problem to be solved. Okay, yeah, that's good. Next one. Similarly, you know, joining different course unions and clubs and stuff, and also going to other, like, you know, small groups, Bible studies and stuff, also attention to be managed, because you need to balance your time out in these things. Okay, next one. Whoa, PNC versus UCM. Oh, tension to be managed or problem to be solved. I know those people out there. No, I've heard some interesting stories. So I'm in Create, I'm in clubs, I'm in the booths all the time, and, you know, people get chatting, and then usually the biggest question or the thing I hear the most is, oh, yeah, PUC, what's it different than UCM? I was like, oh, okay. Oh, sure, I can tell you, like, what physical differences there are, like, where we physically meet, the times we meet. Oh, so by the way, if you're free on Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., 5139, come check us out. So you'll know what the difference is. But, and the second question is that, why is there a need to be two Christian clubs on campus? Why can't there just be one? Haven't you thought of merging with them? I was like, oh, funny you mentioned. Actually, I am good friends with James, Josh, and I got baptized here. Funny you say that. Does that mean we technically merge? But anyways, so it's like, yeah, and some people present it as like, you can't have two clubs here. We're Christian and stuff, but they're... I'm just saying, like, it's not a problem to be solved, but a tension to manage. Or it's not even a tension. Like, see, I'm here as well. And so this goes towards pointing to another problem or, like, another tension we face or we see, which is your church versus my church. This might be a thing which people are seeing or feeling. And then... as I said, this is not a problem to be solved, but a tension to be managed. A parallel I'll say to people usually is that, why can't we have two or more Christian clubs on campus? Because there's so many churches in this world, in this city alone, and so many denominations as well. Like, it's a tension to be managed. It's okay that you like going to your church where I guess maybe none of your other UCM friends are going because you find a good community there, or maybe you've just grown up there, or you just like it there. Like, it's not a problem we need to solve and be like, oh, everyone needs to go to that church because everyone's going there. Well, there's beauty in all these differences, and there's beauty in tension. And yeah, and I think this would hinder us if we like keep thinking in a sense that, oh, I'm going to this church, this is my church people, or this is your church people, or stuff like that. So good reflection to have. So in conclusion for this slide, for this section, I'll say that life actually just gets more and more complicated, believe it or not, when you graduate, when you grow up, when you get married, when you have a family, when you have kids. Right, James? Yeah. Right, Todd? Yeah. And you'll just have more hats. And so you're bound to be more, there'll be more tensions to manage. And the more responsibilities you have, like you'll be wearing different hats all the time. So keep in mind, when you have more responsibilities, most of them are actually tensions to be managed, not problems to be solved. Okay. So next one I'd like to introduce you is fanatic discipline, the 20-mile march. This is something I'll tell you about. So I'll tell you a story first, yeah. And then, black and white photos, right? Back in those days, yeah. So this is a story about Amundsen's South Pole expedition. So back in 1911, it's the first expedition to reach the geographical South Pole of the world. So two teams set out, one which was Roald Amundsen, by Norwegian, who was leading the Norwegian team, and Robert Falcon Scott, who led the British team. So yeah, so actually, let's go to the next slide. You can see they both set off in the same location. That's a map of like kind of like where they went and stuff like that. And so both teams set off at the same time. They had like same equipment, similar understanding of the environment, same number of people on the team, more importantly, similar skills. But each team experienced a dramatically different like outcome and result. So Amundsen reached the South Pole at the end, 30 days before Scott's team reached the South Pole. And on the journey back, Scott's entire team perished and never made it back home. So you can see here, literally one route takes you to life and gives you life. One route literally ultimately leads to death. So that's kind of like the point I want to bring out in here. So let's have a look. Next slide. So actually, years later, in 2011, American business researcher Jim Collins studied Amundsen's and Scott's teams, looked at their diaries, and asked a question. Why are some organizations and teams thrive in uncertainty and even in chaos? And why others don't? So Collins studied like a lot of organizational teams and looked at these findings and published it in this book called Great by Choice. And what he found in his studies actually shocked his team. And because they expected to kind of find that organizations and teams which has exponentially greater results in their outcomes are more creative, you know, more visionary, are more charismatic, ambitious, or risk-taking, or bold. But next slide. In reality, it's the opposite. These organizations or these teams were not any of these. So they were not more creative, they were not more visionary, not more charismatic, not more ambitious, not more risk-taking, not more prone to big, bold moves. And is this sometimes how we try to approach things when we try to like do our lives? We want to be a lot of these, but his study shows that those people who actually have a bigger impact are not any of these. So, next slide. They found three characteristics of organizations and teams that demonstrated extraordinary impact than others. And these teams were marked by these three things. And these teams were marked by, first, fanatic discipline, second, empirical creativity, and third, productive paranoia. But today I'm only focusing on fanatic discipline. So these findings, even though it's for organizations and teams or companies, but it's actually true for all of us. All of life these can be applied to, and even applied to your current life as a student here. And I think these would be interesting for you guys. So let's go back to the story of Amundsen and Scott. Yeah, and yeah, these are the journals they wrote, and they were later published in books and then like translated and stuff. So let's talk about how these two teams actually approached the expedition really differently, because you see they had a dramatically different result. So firstly, Scott and his British team set out and was determined to take every day as it comes so that they would respond to the circumstances. So on days which is clear weather, it's doing great, they will push hard to the point of exhaustion, walking 40 to 60 miles a day until they couldn't go anymore. And on days that, well, basically when the weather was bad or stormy, they would camp out and they would hunker down and wait for the opportunity or window to go again. Well, that sounds really logical, right? If it's good, go as far as possible. If it's not good, then sit here and rest. But listen to what Amundsen and his Norwegian team did. Amundsen and his Norwegian team actually took a very different approach to doing this expedition. They were determined no matter what came to them that day, they had a goal to reach, and they also understood that goal well. And on clear sunny days, they would go 20 miles and then rest, knowing that they have accomplished what they set out to do that day, and were not going to put themselves towards the brink of exhaustion. And on bad stormy days, the same days, Scott and his British team wrote in their journals that, oh, the weather was too terrible for everyone to travel. No one should be out there. Guess what Amundsen did? Amundsen and his team traveled 20 miles, like they did on a sunny day. Amundsen wrote in his journal, in the same days Scott wrote, Amundsen wrote that, oh, those were terrible days, but yet we still accomplished our goal of walking 20 miles. Because Amundsen and his team refused to allow the weather and circumstances to dictate their goals they had and their mission they set out to do. So Jim Collins, back in his book, referred to this as fanatic discipline, which is the first characteristic I've shown. And it's not that Amundsen and his team didn't adjust to things. It doesn't mean you can't be flexible when you have this fanatic discipline. It just means that they were relentless in pursuing their goals and they know what they were doing. And so let's have a look at fanatic discipline. This is what fanatic discipline is. This is a definition, you can read it out. So 10xers, so those people who display exorbitant results and fruitful results, are extremely consistent, have extreme consistency in action, consistency with their values, long-term goals, performance, standards, and methods. They are utterly relentless and unbending in their focus on their goals and mission. So let's continue. And so, actually, the signature of mediocrity is chronic inconsistency. And so our overstanding when it's good, overreacting, pulling back when it's bad, succumbing to hard and leaping for alluring but irrelevant opportunities. What leads to greatness is consistent, consecutive performances that has both a lower bound and an upper bound. So when you read this, does that seem true in your life? Like, Consistency a thing, or do you feel like there's times that there's no lower bound and upper bound? You just do things like as it goes, as it comes to you. So this all this results is not just like how we approach life, but this can be applied to how we approach our walk with Jesus at the end. So when we are determined, no matter what the day brings, that we have to be in the presence of God. And that being in the presence of God is our number one priority for that day. No matter if I wake up, if I feel like it, or I don't feel like it. Whether that day I actually hear God's voice, or I don't hear God's voice. Or that no matter what, I'm going to sit in God's presence and speak to him and allow him to speak to us. And that will always have a greater impact in our lives than, let's say, for example, this semester, I will go to a retreat and fill me up again. Or I'm tired this Sunday. I will go to church to feel the presence of God in Sunday, only at Sunday. Or, you know, reading week is next week, right? Because I've finished studying, I don't have midterms, or I don't have assignments to do. I forgot to like do my devotionals like all throughout the semester. Oh, during reading week, I will spend the whole reading week reading the New Testament. Says no one, right? Yeah. I don't think that's going to fill you up. I think having consistency will fill you up, right? And so similarly, in your families, friendships, relationships as well, if you're present in the day in and day out of those people, it's always going to have a greater impact than those who plan like maybe a one-time big vacation in summer, or those who check in maybe once a year with people. Not saying like planning big vacations are bad, but as I said, the day in, day out matters. Consistency matters. So the same can also be said about Sabbath. So feeling tired or burnt out now from 8 months of school, like at the end of April, and then you'd be like, oh yeah, great, summer comes around where I have like 4 months to like big bold time that I'm away from school. Thinking, oh, those 4 months are the 4 months I will take a Sabbath. But and then, you know, reality hits, right? Then you have work in summer, or you have exchange, or you have just like different stuff to do, or can go to a mission trip. Anyways, so this actually can't solve or replace a weekly rhythm with the Lord that is healthy, that he's wired us and created us for, which is a weekly Sabbath. Like taking these long stretches without resting, and then like resting afterwards, thinking that will do things, actually doesn't work. So now, like, look around you. When we switch off from daylight savings into standard time, you know, it's dark at 4 p.m. now, right? And maybe you still have a 6 p.m. lab or lecture to go, or maybe a 7 p.m. UCM here listening to me talk. And yeah, you want to go to bed. It's cold outside, or I don't want to go outside. But we have to be determined that we have a goal and we have a mission to go at it despite the weather or despite the circumstances. So if you have a goal set out, you'll know that no matter what, I'll go to that lab, I'll go to the lecture, I'll go to UCM, I'll go to my church. And I'm standing here saying all of this, telling you this, not because, oh, look at me, I'm so good, I'm doing this, or I'm perfectly doing this well. There are times I cannot do this. I cannot practice what I said here, which is fanatic discipline, that I cannot do the 20-mile march. Or there are times I've treated tensions, all these tensions in my life, as if they were problems to be solved. So main takeaway is that you and me, we're all on this journey, on the same boat together, trying to learn and put these things that God has told us into practice. And at the end, we can't just rely on ourselves because we are weak. We're finite. We don't know what to do. But we need to rely on God at the end to be our strength and wisdom and our guide through all of this. I pray that like this message like resonates to you and can be applicable to you for this semester. And so here's some discussion questions. You can turn to the people around you to discuss for 10 minutes. So two questions we have here. So yeah, name one tension to be managed that you currently have that you've been treating like a problem to be solved. As going back to the first part of the talk. And then second one is name one thing in your life right now that you want to see consistency and practice fanatic discipline. Yeah, pray that today will be a restful and blessed day. Thank you.